Shalom, good morning. This is Joan. Come back for a visit and want to introduce you or ask these charming young women to introduce themselves and what they're doing here.
Thank you, Joan. I'm Deb Levy. It's great to be back. And in the studio today, we have Judy Lubetsky and our special guest all the way from America, Maya Evrona. Maya, welcome.
Thank you.
Very happy to have you here. And what brings you to New Zealand?
Well, I am giving some readings of my translations of Yiddish poetry. I was previously in Melbourne and gave a reading at the Kadima Yiddish Library and Cultural Center with the help of a grant that I have from the National Yiddish Book Center in the United States. And then I came over to New Zealand and gave a reading at the Holocaust Center in Wellington. And now I'm going to be giving a reading in Auckland.
Fantastic. And so for our listeners out there, if you'd like to attend the reading, we do have some information for you about that we'll give at the end of the show. And we're really grateful to have you in the studio. Thanks to Judy Lubetsky. Judy, can you tell us a little bit about what attracted you to Maya's work?
I think the thing that attracted to me possibly may come out as Maya talks about the Yiddish poetry that she has been translating, and in particular Avram Sutskever, who lived through the destruction of the Vilna ghetto, and he was a poet and partisan. But also, I think what probably also ignited my interest is that he spent a lot of time documenting the lives of Jews and Jewish culture and crimes the Nazis committed against them. And they collected every note, every book, every scrap and testimony and smuggled them out of the ghetto. And my late father-in-law, Moshe Lubetsky of blessed memory, fortunately, although he'd himself was born in Lithuania, was in Moscow studying in the university during that time of the destruction of Lithuania. But he did go back to Lithuania in 1944. I'm pretty sure he would have met and embraced Avram Sutskever when he was flown over in 1944. And he, like Avram, spent his time before he left Israel, left for Israel in 1972, he collected documents and photo material of the Nazis and the accomplices during the destruction of the whole three Baltic states and smuggled them to Israel. So for me, this is like honoring Maya and her wonderful contribution to Yiddish culture and the Jewish civilization, and honoring this wonderful poet and honoring my wonderful father-in-law, Moshe Lubetsky.
Beautiful. Maya, I'm really interested because the events that Judy is talking about took place in the 1930s and 40s, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting in front of you and you're very young, and I'm wondering how you ended up on this journey.
Well, I might not be quite as young as you think I am, but so when I was a teenager, so I've been writing poetry for a long time, like my whole life really, and when I was a teenager, I decided that I wanted to translate poetry because it can be a good way of, exploring your craft as a poet, and it seemed natural to learn Yiddish and translate Yiddish poetry because it was a language that I felt that I had a connection to because my grandparents spoke it. So that was how I started. And I actually studied Yiddish at the summer program at the Vilnius University in Lithuania, which, of course, Vilnius used to be called Vilna, and it's where Sutskever was from. So it was sort of natural to become engaged in Sutskever's work because his presence is so strong there.
Great. And would you be able to share with us some of the poetry?
Sure. So I'm going to start with one that I translated somewhat recently. Sutskever, he immigrated to Israel to what was then Palestine just before the 1948 war. And then he continued writing poetry in Yiddish for the rest of his life. And most of the poems that I translate are from a collection that he wrote in the 70s and 80s called Poems from My Diary. So it led to him being awarded the Israel Prize, which was the only time the prize was ever awarded for poetry or for literature that was written in Yiddish rather than Hebrew. And it's considered his masterpiece, even though people tend to kind of associate him with the poetry he wrote during the Holocaust. But he kept absorbing the experience and writing poetry for decades after. And a lot of it, you know, because he was living in Israel, it includes the, you know, Israeli scenery. And there's one poem that I translated last year that I found very moving, in which he is observing the storks that migrate over Israel back to Lithuania, and thinking, you know, that they could go back and he couldn't. So I will start with the Yiddish. Von Sorn dicken Salz der Horizont und Karawanen bedachte Kämmlen ziehen sich in Kemmeltrit verschiete, nur übersehe silberlache Strune von Butschanen, der Mond, es ich hob gehatte Mole Heimstadt in der Litte. Verschotten meine Spuren hatte Düne noch a Düne, oh, wer hat angezeugen jene silberlache Strune? Zerschneiden wird sie itzter, mein Zikornwelt auf zweien. Und es tappen kämmlen die verschiedene Kämmeltrit und gehen. Die Spuren meine such ich zu verendigen dem Wander. Nur spätlach scheuen sich auszulernen Hochma bei die Kämmlen. Die silberlache Strune von Butschanen schneit voneinander. A dritte Schicht von Stillkeit über samtene Gesemmlen. Es verschlingt euch meine Wärter eine reißgequälte Düne, und bläus der Midbertäivel brenzelt oben auf der Strune. Es erfallen sich in Samt fata morganische Palazen, a Splitter von der Rege, in mein Herzen wird sie platzen. And now I'll read the translation, which was first published in an online journal called Tupelo Quarterly, which was edited by a friend of mine. And it goes, a horizon of furious salt. A horizon of furious salt. And prudent camels move along with disappearing footsteps in caravans. But above them a silvery string of storks recalls that I once had a hometown in what then was Poland. Dune after dune has erased the trail I left. Oh, who has strung up that silvery string? Now it will divide in two my world of memories, and camels grope along in vanishing steps and keep going. I am searching for my footprints to finish my migration, but it's already too late to learn the camel's wisdom. The silvery string of storks is slashing apart, a third layer of silence over clouds of dust. A gushing dune engulfs my words, and the desert's demon is all that strikes that string above. A mirage of palaces crumbles in the sand. A sliver of a moment, it will explode within my heart.
Mm. Thank you.
Mm, thank you.
I wonder, in Israel, did they translate his poetry into Hebrew?
Minimally. There's been more interest in him lately. There was recently a documentary made about his life called Black Honey. And I think that in the past few years, there's been a collection of his poems published in Hebrew translation. But for much of his life, when he was living in Israel, he was somewhat ignored, which was surprising because Israel really does value poetry. And actually, when he died in 2010, the Israeli government didn't send any representatives to his funeral, which was surprising for a poet of his stature. Mm. But it was just a function of him writing in Yiddish rather than Hebrew.
Does that struggle come out in his poetry? Does he reflect on it?
When he first arrived in Israel, he did write a poem that's one of his better-known poems. I've never translated it, where he was kind of responding to the pressure to write in Hebrew and the, you know, overwhelming verdict in Israel that Yiddish was really going to be a dead language after the Holocaust. And, you know, in Israel, there's also sort of a sense that it's, you know, the language of downtrodden diaspora Jews rather than strong Israeli Jews. And I don't mean to be, I don't mean to get political.
You know, that is mirrored in any organization where you get together.
That's true. There's always that tension between the old and the new and the direction we've come from and the direction we want to go in. But it's particularly pronounced in Israel in relation to language.
Yeah.
You know, what does Hebrew represent in terms of building a nation and moving forward?
Yeah.
And what does Yiddish represent in terms of the horror and terrors and challenges that we went through in Europe and the Shoah and the Holocaust?
Mm-hmm. And what's the price we're paying for relegating Yiddish as a lesser language?
Yeah.
You know, what richness are we missing out on?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is a beginning of recognizing its worth and bringing it back to life.
Absolutely. It's why your work's so important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so he was certainly neglected in Israel, although he kept writing and he believed in his work. And you can really see in some of his poems that he really believed that it was going to last. And during the Holocaust, he had believed that writing poetry would save him somehow. And it actually did, because the poems that he wrote in the ghetto were smuggled into the Soviet Union, and they were some of the firsthand testimonies that were read there of what was happening to Jews in places of Nazi occupation. And the poets Boris Pasternak and Ilya Ehrenberg actually pressured the Soviet government and the Lithuanian government in exile to rescue Sutskever, and they did. So it literally did save his life. But then in the poems that he wrote for decades after, when he was living in Israel, he really believed that his poems were going to last, at least in his writing. Sometimes when you read writing by people who knew him, if you were actually talking to him, sometimes he could get a bit more pessimistic. But certainly in his writing, he was much more optimistic about what would happen to his legacy and how his poetry would continue to be read. And he believed very strongly in translation, and he really saw it as this mystical, magical art form in and of itself, which is rewarding as a translator.
I noticed that the Yiddish you speak sounds different from the Yiddish I've grown up with.
Oh, what sort of Yiddish did you grow up with?
It didn't sound like yours.
Where were your parents from?
They were from Latvia.
Hmm.
But I think they studied in Germany. So.
Oh, that may have influenced.
So I think that probably did, yeah.
I mean, my Yiddish is somewhat artificial because I learned it as an adult, you know, mostly an adult. And you tend to learn a sort of standardized version of Yiddish rather than, you know, the Yiddish people actually spoke tended to be strongly influenced by where they were from.
Much like with any language.
Yeah, it's like with English.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And Maya, as a poet, can you relate to that journey of being perhaps the person you want to be in your poetry and that kind of optimism and projecting the voice you want to have, even if that isn't there all the time in everyday life?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I end up projecting the voice I want to have. It's more the sort of the convictions I have deep down, whereas when it, you know, rather than the day-to-day doubts that can sort of overwhelm you.
So
you
know, the poetry catches the essence, the
yeah.
deep down important things that you want to convey.
Yeah, some sort of deeper truth. Because really, to continue writing poetry, one really has to have a deep-seated conviction in it and a need. Because, it's not the most... I think that people really do love poetry and value it. But on a day-to-day basis, you encounter a lot of frustrations as a poet. And it can seem like it's not that valued by certainly American society, which is where I'm from. But if you keep doing it, it's because you really believe deep down in the worth of it. And I think that that ends up coming out with the poems I actually write, mm-hmm. because they come from a very deep place. But, you know, but I also have my doubts.
You have to convey so much more in a poet by the words you use,
mm-hmm.
so that your words have to encompass such a lot. Which you don't have to in everyday speech, because you can build on it.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
It's a very difficult art form, yes. One of the nice things about translating is that there are always poems to translate, whereas when you're actually writing poetry, you can't just sit down and say, I'm going to write a poem today, because it's whatever you come up with is not going to be that good. It has to sort of arise from you naturally. And actually, Sutskever writes a lot about this. He's always talking about moments, and I think what he means by moments is poems and sort of just bursting out. So the nice thing about translating is that you don't have to wait for one of those moments. You can just do it, and it can hold you over for, we know, when there are long periods when you're not really writing anything worthwhile.
How do you decide what's worthwhile?
To translate or to write?
Both.
Usually if something comes naturally without me needing to push it, like if something, sometimes just a line will appear in my mind, that usually is worthwhile. But with translating, I don't actually always know until I've begun translating something how good it will be. I usually don't have a sense of the worth of it until I've finished translating it, actually.
When you translate it, do you translate it as a poem or just translation?
Well, the aim is certainly to create a poem in English. And I know the more years I've spent translating, the more willing I am to depart from the original poem than to be perfectly literal in my translation. Because I think you really have to create something that's going to engage the reader. And it's very easy when translating poetry to create something that's a little dry, that doesn't, that might not draw a reader in. And there really has to be, you know, a poem, it has to be like a song, you know, that sort of catches your attention.
Can't just be word for word understanding what each word means. You have to capture the meaning of the poem and the feeling of the poet.
Yeah. So, for example, in the poem that I read, there's a bit, as somebody who understands Yiddish might have been surprised by how I translated the word Lita, which is oftentimes translated as Lithuania, but I translated it as what then was Poland, because in Yiddish, Lita really, it refers to sort of the medieval Grand Duchy of Lithuania. It doesn't refer to the modern state of Lithuania. And when Sutskever was growing up, when he lived in Vilna, it was actually part of Poland. And he was very much engaged with Polish culture there. He was very influenced by Polish poetry. And prior to the war, he had really seen his poetry as a potential bridge between Jews and Poles in Vilna. Although after the war, he was much more pessimistic about that, and really didn't feel that there was a future for Jews anymore in Lithuania, which was why he went to Israel. So anyway, in my translation of the poem that I read, I ended up translating Lita as what once was Poland or what then was Poland, partly because I needed it to go with caravan earlier in the poem, and Lithuania wouldn't have gone, whereas Poland and caravan, they sort of, it's not a rhyme, but it still flows well. But in the poem that appeared immediately before this in the collection, in the diary collection, there's a poem called The Blade of Grass from Ponar, and there I translated Lita as Lithuania. So I like that, that when I publish this as a book, both of these poems will be right next to one another, and it will keep readers on their toes about the fact that there really is no perfect way to translate Lita into English. So
I love how thoughtful you are about it. Any decision that you've made, there's a whole history behind it. Everything that you've looked into, thought about. It's a beautiful process, but also a very taxing one.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumination that goes on and a lot of self-questioning. And I mean, I was just sending in a translation a couple days ago to an editor who had requested it, and I sent her two different versions, and I said, you can take whichever version you like, but I created two of them because I couldn't decide.
So when you studied, was poetry, writing poetry, part of your studies, or was that an extramural?
Well, I have an unusual educational history.
Tell us about it.
Well, I was quite sick until I was 20, 21 years old. And I have some ongoing health issues, but I'm much, much healthier now. But I was unable to go to school, so I didn't go to middle school or high school, but spent a lot of time reading. And then when I was 18, I was not able to go to college, but I was already invested in writing at the same time. And then when I was 20, somebody suggested applying to a master's program in fine arts and creative writing. And I did, and I was accepted, so I never bothered going to college. I just went to this master's program. So there I did both prose and poetry. So, yes.
So it met your needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fortunate it was there.
Yeah, it was funny because I had taken, so I grew up in Massachusetts, and Harvard actually has quite a very good continuing education program. So even though I wasn't able to go to high school, when I was a teenager, I started taking I would take like one night class a year or two, eventually like two at Harvard. And which was nice because I met people, people of all different ages take classes there because it's just nice as a hobby for a lot of people. And then there are people who are actually getting degrees. So I had already taken writing workshops there. And one of my classmates, I just happened to run into him, and he was getting a master's at the program that I eventually went to. And he suggested applying. And I laughed and I said, I don't have a bachelor's degree. And he said, I think it would be worth just applying. And so I did, and I got in. But it's not for anyone thinking about getting a master's in creative writing. I wouldn't recommend doing it the way I did it because I really didn't know anything about the process.
I was listening to a recording of you, which I thought was really interesting this morning before I came here, and you talked about the influence of the translations of poetry on your own poetry, and I'd love to hear, you expand on that and maybe even share one of the poems that you would like to share today of your poetry.
So translating poetry from Yiddish, because Yiddish is such a Jewish language, it makes me think a lot about ownership of language and has made me think about English in a different way. And then also just I end up ruminating about Yiddish words. And so last year, 2 years ago, I wrote a poem in English that was kind of, it was all about Yiddish. There was all this Yiddish wordplay that was hidden in the original English. And then the Yiddish Book Center asked me to translate it into Yiddish, and they published it in a little anthology that they released last year called Radiant Jargon. So I can recite that if you want. I'll have to do it from memory. So the English goes, "Perhaps there is memory growing out of oblivion. A miracle happening on a journey, As the nightingale sings an aching soliloquy, buried in a forest in Poland. And in Yiddish, I'll have to remember, it's Efsher der Monung wächst reus von dem Mon. Efsher a Ness geschät da Phönicia. Beschass der Solovei singt sich a Monolog von Wehen. Beerdigt in a Wald in Lita.
Beautiful. For those who are listening who'd like to hear more of Maya, Judy, can you tell us about what's coming up?
Yes, and we would love for you to join us Sunday, 16th of June, to join Maya and myself and other people who would like to hear Maya present some of her poetry and the poetry that she has translated at the Ray Friedman Library, 16th of June, between 5 and 6:30.
So that's 5 o'clock at the Ray Friedman Library in Meadowbank?
Yes.
Yep, and those details can Google, you can find it online.
Yeah. And because we're short of time, I want to say that we're going to finish up with that song that I've given, that if we've got time, which is called Under Your White Stars. And come on Sunday to get the translation, but I know you will find that the melody you will find haunting, which Avram wrote in the Vilna Ghetto.
Well, thank you very much. We really enjoyed that, and I wish we could go on longer.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to Judy for finding you and bringing you.
Be'oneg, as they say in Hebrew.
Lovely, and you can listen to this online at Planet FM and tune into other Radio Shalom shows. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Beats.